My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series from Left, Right, and Crooked Media called Long Play.
For both major parties, the path to winning America runs through the South. But to win it, you have to understand it.
And that's where Long Play comes in. Across six Southern states, Long Play examines the issues driving voters and the assumptions that no longer hold in a region that could shape the future of our politics and our country.
You can binge the whole series right now by subscribing to Long Play Series on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan, and this week we are welcoming Lee McGowan to the show. We're so excited you're here, Lee. You may know Lee as the host of the Politics Girl podcast, or I Am Politics Girl on social media, or as the hilarious lady behind the headline, CNN panelist can't hide her contempt for Scott Jennings.
I mean, can any of us really?
Welcome, Lee. We're so glad you're here. Okay, Lee, this week among the right-wing conniption fit over John Ossoff's like room temperature reference to Natalie Harp, it was revealed that Harp was so obsessed with President Trump, she once rode in the trunk of an SUV so she could accompany him to court. What's the most humiliating thing that you've ever done for a guy who didn't like you as much as you like him?
Oh, God, are you serious? Did you hear that Natalie also slept in the locker room of Bette Midler because they couldn't find her a room?
Yes.
So she lived there for a while.
But, like, I'm questioning the physics of that. Like, what, did she sleep on one of those little benches?
Yeah,
did she
like sleep the bench.
Coffin
yeah.
style?
Maybe she did. Maybe she hung upside down.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? But this woman is obsessed. And I think the thing is that, like you said, the very lukewarm comment from John Ossoff. He was like, he would rather travel with Natalie. And everyone's like, outrageous. Scott himself did his podcast yesterday that was like, why I am so outraged.
He's a feminist. Feminist icon, Scott Jennings.
Feminist icon that keeps blowing by the Epstein files. Like, this is bananas. Mm-hmm. And I think we should know what's going on with, you know, a woman who stays 4 feet from Donald Trump at all times and was chosen among all people above our Secretary of State to travel on the plane that wasn't going to get blown up, you know?
Yeah.
That is something we really should know.
I just want to know, where's Melania? Where is
she? As like, far away as she possibly can be. Let's be honest. Melania wants nothing to do with it. She loves Natalie. She's very happy Natalie's
doing
her job. And Melania can be off doing her thing.
Yeah. Natalie Harp is her human shield.
Yep.
In a
absolutely.
Way.
She's thrilled.
Today, we're diving into Trump's personal lawyer, a.k.a. Attorney General Todd Blanche's corrupt first weeks in his new post, the administration's blatant denial of the chaos unfolding on the USS Abraham Lincoln, Trump's scheme to take over the U.S. banking system. Great. And the new data centers popping up all over the country. Then we're going to talk about a surprising new discourse of family estrangements. Finally, we'll wrap up with Sandy Petty. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that enjoys dancing on Corey Mills' political grave. Now, Corey Mills, as you are aware, Lee, is a Florida representative who has, I think, the political science term is a fucked up history. He's like, he's been accused of all the bad stuff. Yeah. He is like a when, you know, all the Transformers get together and they become one like
the, auto like one giant. I don't think that's the Transformers. I feel like that's a kid's show where they all became one creature. What was that
there
thing
was,
called?
There was a Power Rangers. They
Power
do that.
Rangers.
They
thing
also
that did that.
They also did that in Transformers when they became like the Super Autobot.
Oh,
but I think he's like an Autobot of all the bad things that Republican men are right now. He's got domestic violence.
Perfect.
Accusations.
Check.
He's got accusations of running kind of a crooked, like, arms dealing adjacent business.
Yeah, yeah, check.
He is, was dating a 19-year-old when he was 43, and he was like, adults just want to find love. Like,
check, check, check.
Check, check, check. Well, he lost his primary in Florida last night, so I don't know. What do you think's in the future for Representative Mills?
Fox News host.
Fox News host?
OAN, you know
with
what I mean?
That like jawline? Something.
Ooh, good point. They do like the handsomes. maybe he'll pull over to one of the other networks. But I mean, like you said, he's the epitome of what this party stands for now and what people should really be distancing themselves from. I mean, I think somebody put out a stat the other day that said once a week a Republican representative comes out as having an inappropriate relationship with a child. Once a week is too many Too many. That's a real problem.
We want to get it down to zero times
We'd
a week.
We'd love it to be 0 times a week. Yeah. And we would love to not have the, you know, the avatar of the entire party be, you know, in the Epstein files.
Yeah.
A million times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fish rot from the head down, don't they?
They do.
All right. Speaking of rotten, Todd Blanche, Trump's personal lawyer turned deputy attorney general turned attorney general, is in his new job as actual attorney general. And he's been there for a little over a week. Before he was serving there, he was serving as the active AG since Pam Bondi got the boot in April. As a reminder, our attorney general is the country's top law enforcement official and is supposed to run an independent and impartial DOJ. But in our performance review of Blanche's short tenure, it's clear he has no interest in the actual integrity of the role. He has declined to pledge independence from the White House. He said, of course, he will consider Trump's view for decisions. He's appeared to implicitly endorse New York Republican gubernatorial nominee at a rally. Basically, he's standing on his hind legs begging for treats from Donald Trump like a legal lapdog. And we also know where his priorities lie, especially in abortion, because earlier this month, a recording of a prayer call, which, why are you on a prayer call, sir? A recording of a prayer call leaked where he told faith leaders that the DOJ was working with federal health agencies in the White House to make the Dobbs decision permanent in every single state. Mm-hmm. And lest we forget, it was Todd Blanche who did a sit down with accused child sex trafficker and Epstein accomplice Ghislaine Maxwell last July, shortly before she was transferred from Florida to a like puppy prison camp in Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. What's going on? What's your reaction to AG Todd Blanche? What do you think he's up to?
Well, listen, AG Todd Blanche should have been disqualified from the very beginning, right? The idea that the president's personal defense attorney should be the attorney general of the United States is just like a ludicrous, blatant conflict of interest. I mean, it should have been shut down by the Republicans right away. It was outrageous from the beginning. And like you said, this is the same guy who is ignoring the Epstein victims, right? He will not talk to them. He moved Ghislaine into her puppy prison. Mm-hmm. He's just got no business being there. He's been AG for, what, less than a week? And he's already said, like you said, his priority is to make abortions illegal. So no more states' rights, no more we're giving it to the states. Like, this thing is going away, period, the end. It's Project 2025, wet dream. He's putting his finger on the scale for these Republican candidates, which is absolutely the opposite of what a Justice Department person is supposed to do. It's supposed to be completely independent. We had a complete meltdown when a former president ran into an AG on a tarmac once. And now we've got him being like, yeah, you should vote for this guy, mm-hmm. which is bananas. So I think with Todd, he's going to be a real problem. I think he's going to be a real problem with this election. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to allow way more than we should have to interfere with these elections. I think he's the exact AG that Trump wanted in 2020, that he said, you know, like, go get me these ballots, go find me these ballots. You know, that's the AG he wanted in 2020, and it's the AG he has now, and it's what we should be really looking out for, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Here's something that happened to Pam Bondi, though. Like, nobody could have been a bigger lapdog than Pam Bondi. Like, you saw her histrionics in cabinet meetings where she was like, you saved, are y'all ready for this, 65 million or whatever. She said like 100 million people were saved by Donald Trump, Donald Trump's government intercepting.
One-third of the country.
One-third of America almost died. And she was just trotting out these ridiculous, like, chest-puffing, like, statements that were completely ridiculous and humiliating for her to say. She tried to pursue Trump's priorities as AG, but ran into this pesky thing called the law, courts, grand juries. I feel like Todd Blanche is facing the same entrenched establishment that Pam Bondi did. Do you think he can somehow figure out a way to circumvent it, or is he going to run into a justice system-shaped wall as well?
Well, Aaron, first of all, he's not a woman. He's not trying to do it
that's
while
true.
Being a woman. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the problem. I mean,
he's
the first
never
going
to have his period.
And honestly, at the end of the day, the first people that have been kicked from the cabinet are all women, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're the ones that take the heat first. Mm-hmm. At least Pam told us that there were thousands of hours of videos of the Epstein tape that had shocked her, you know? It was Pam that said, they're all on my desk and you wouldn't believe what's in them. It's Pam that gave all those, you know, influencers the binders to stand outside of the White House. And then it was Pam that was like, yep, nothing to see here.
Yeah.
I just don't think that she was willing to completely tank her entire life. And Donald Trump needs people that will tank their entire life for him. And I think Todd is 100% on board for that. I think Todd has been a Trump guy from the beginning. And I think Todd has absolutely zero scruples. If Pam has one, mm-hmm. he has zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing that I keep bumping up against is, like, what is his long-term plan? Like, Donald Trump is an 80-year-old man, you know, and he's not going to be president for that much longer in the grand scheme of human history. Okay. You know, his life will not go on. And we're not dealing with, like, J.D. Vance. You know what I mean? We're not dealing with somebody who's got decades left. If you take a look at, like, how Trump has declined just in his vitality from 2024 to now, it is dramatic.
Yeah.
If you look at speeches from 2024 versus now, I wonder if what does someone like Todd Blanche have for after Trump is gone? Does he have an AT, like, after Trump plan?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people with an AT. I think they all have to have that. Mm-hmm. I think the goal and why they're moving as fast as they are is to make sure that the system is rigged enough that even when Trump is gone, they still have all the power. I mean, I think they're dry running it with the Mitch McConnell thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we haven't seen that man for 2 months,
yep.
And he's still doing votes in the Senate. Mm-hmm. He's still voting to approve Todd Blanche, even though we have not seen him and he is most likely dead.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try that. I think they are beta testing what happens when they lose the president and how long they can trick the public. And I think that they're trying to set up a system so it is a J.D. Vance or it is a Marco Rubio or it is, in my opinion, a Tucker Carlson, and they've already got the – you know, the culture on board, and mm-hmm. they have taken all the wheels of power. So it doesn't matter what we think, what we want, what we vote for.
Mm-hmm.
They already have it. They're not planning to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They are not acting like a group of people who think they have to win an election.
Yeah.
So I think that should terrify us, that they are acting in such a way that's like, yeah, so what? Soldiers don't eat. What are you going to do? Be a man about it. You know what I mean? Like, they are not acting like people that were trying to win an election. They're acting like people that think they're going nowhere. And I think Todd thinks he's in the inner circle and that's where he's going to stay.
Hmm. Well, I don't know if he would have gone on the Natalie plane or the regular plane that Stephen Miller was on, but I mean, I don't know.
They said Pete Hegseth on the Natalie plane, and now Pete is, you know, cruising around, checking out his potential presidential possibilities. And I'm like, ooh, baby, you're not going to make it on the plane next time.
I cannot think of a more compromisable guy. Like, what we know about Pete Hegseth, what we know about him is horrendous. Like, a police report indicating a sexual assault, like, which he denies, which he doesn't deny the sexual encounter,
yeah.
which would have happened when I think his third wife was pregnant with their baby, but he did deny the sexual assault. But there was, like, a police report and a rape kit done. And
yeah.
So there's that. There's the fact that he's had three wives. He cheated on wife number one with wife number two, cheated on wife number two with wife number three, and then was, like, sleeping around Washington. He drank his way through two veterans organizations. He's basically gorged himself with, like, lobster tail and fancy lotion, I guess. I don't know.
He built a whole makeup room.
He's getting Botox at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Like, he is what don't we know? Like, we never know everything. And I feel like that's just the tip of the iceberg with him. And now he thinks he can be the president.
Yeah. I think he thinks he would look good on the poster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think he can do the president, much like he can't be the Secretary of Defense. Like,
yeah.
You can't hire someone like a 46-year-old frat boy with a drinking problem to run the Department of Defense. And you certainly can't hire that man to be president of the United States. But he certainly does look good on the poster. And I think that's where they get confused, that mm-hmm. they think, like, well, this is my job to mm-hmm. look presidential. Like, it doesn't matter if I can do the job. Donald Trump can't do the job. I'm just going to be the next person in line for this.
Mm-hmm.
The man has the brains of an artichoke. Like, it's not going to happen.
Well, you know what's crazy? And I talk about this a lot and I kind of wonder at it. So Pete Hegseth and I grew up not far from each other.
Ah.
And we would have been in high school at the same time.
Yikes.
So let that sink in, right?
You know who he was in high school.
He's fucking pickled, man. He is pickled from the inside out, liver out, just a pickled 46-year-old. The thing about him is he was his high school valedictorian and he went to Princeton. He had a brain. At one point, he had a big old brain. And looking how stupid and what a himbo he is now, it's wow.
That is kind of fascinating, actually.
Drinking
that there was a time where he was the valedictorian.
And drinking is very bad for you.
It
like,
is.
It's bad for your brain. Drinking that much over decades. I mean, he is kind of peacocking and being a ridiculous man, which is Michael Wolff's characterization of him, ridiculous man, and I think it's perfect.
Yeah, valid.
The actual service members serving their country are dealing with just completely inhumane situations.
Yeah.
The USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier departed from San Diego in November 2025, and at that time, it was set to return in May of 2026. The deployment did not go as planned. I don't know if plans are a thing in this administration.
Yeah.
The ship made a single-day port stop in Guam in December and then was redirected to the Middle East in January ahead of the war in Iran. We know how that's going. The Lincoln ended up deployed for a record-breaking 9 months with over 200 days in a combat zone. And now the ship is finally set to return home, although, again, TBD dates, and will be replaced by another aircraft carrier, the USS George Washington. Okay, there are 5,000 people on board this ship.
Yes.
5,000 people. Reports of food and water shortages, broken plumbing, mental health crises. I heard that three sailors, I don't know if more than three sailors, but the last I heard was three sailors had attempted to jump overboard. And that was, in some ways, the only way to access mental health care is to actually attempt self-harm on the ship. Meanwhile, the administration is like, oh, no, everything's fine. Pete Hegseth is like, it's completely misrepresented, but I don't know how he can say that from his perch in Iowa, trying not to be photographed eating a corn dog. And then last Friday, Acting Navy Secretary Hung Cao announced the ship's return, and he accused the press of trying to paint our warriors as victims.
Come on, man. I mean, first of all, look, the right wing has gone above and beyond to paint our soldiers as, can I say, pussies?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're trying to do. I saw a Fox News host speaking directly to the camera, and he was like, man up. You're being such babies. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you are the right wing. You are the party of the military. Like, what are you doing mocking these people who are literally suffering? Have you seen some of those videos of, like the sewage going across the floor and coming out of the sinks, and they don't have any soap, and they don't have any – like, even just the food itself. It's not we don't really like this food. It's that they don't have enough food.
Yeah.
And an army marches on its belly. That's, like, the oldest term. You know what I mean? You need good socks, and you need full bellies if mm-hmm. you're going to be a working soldier. I think the thing is we're now learning that Iran destroyed the main U.S. naval logistics hub in Bahrain earlier in the war. And Pete Hegseth did not publicly acknowledge that. They didn't tell anyone that that damage had happened. So while Washington is out here talking about how we're winning, the sailors were living with the reality of what had actually happened. They couldn't go into a base and get more supplies.
We were literally foisted by our own petard.
I know.
And
we go on and on about our lethality and loving the military, and we need to, like, up the tea on all these guys. And you're like, no, you need to up the, like, carbs.
Yeah, you need to give them a piece of meat.
Please, give them a piece of meat while Pete's eating his lobster and steak. Like, I just think the whole thing is that, like, Americans are not the priority of these people, right? It is about their own power, their own image. It's a vanity war, mm-hmm. and we're busy at home with vanity projects. He's using our money and our military for their own good. And I think it's really, really striking that the party that has gone on and on about how much they love the military is the first people to be dissing them like this.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're sending them home, all right? Like, that's breaking news. They're going to bring them home, and it's supposed to be this feel-good story. But they're leaving all the boats that are supposed to support that boat there, like, without a job. Their job, all those little destroyers, is to support the big carrier.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, we're going to bring the carrier home. See, it's a win. It's a win, everybody. The, you know, Lincoln's coming home. But they're leaving all those little boats. And all those little boats have soldiers on them, too, who don't have any of the same things because they can't go into that base in Bahrain.
Ugh.
And, like, there's seven Navy ships that are having the same problem. We're just not hearing about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than just the 5,000 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole group of people mm-hmm. that are supposed to be our fighting men and women that we have completely rejected.
Yeah, it's in such sharp contrast to, like, Pete's chest thumping about lethality and building a high T military. It's like he's more interested in optics than anything else. He hasn't thought through what the actual reality on the ground is. I read that in World War II, they had a ship that was there to make sure that sailors that were deployed on sea were supplied with ice cream. That's how important, like, morale was. And I don't think that's silly at all. I'm like, these people are putting themselves in harm's way for, like, reasons that have never been clearly defined, searching for objectives that have never been clearly spelled out. The least we can do is make sure that they are clean, warm, well-fed and comfortable as we figure out what our way out of this ridiculous quagmire is.
Yeah, I also think it's like this idea that people like, in World War II, we had to do this. I'm like, bro, this is not World War II, right?
This is actually a record-setting deployment.
Yeah.
This is not typical. This is not – 9 months at sea is not how long – people are at sea.
I have a father-in-law who was a Navy pilot, and he did two deployments on those big ships, and it was a long time, but not at sea for that long. He was gone for 18 months when my husband's brother was born, and then he was gone again for, I think, 11 months. But they go into port. They mm-hmm. have a way to get in, and it's a mental health thing. And I think ultimately, like, we're in an unnecessary war that the president promised we wouldn't be in, and the military has a $1 trillion budget. It's the biggest budget they've ever had, even though they keep failing their audits every single year.
Yeah.
And they're like, we don't have enough money to feed the soldiers. Where's the money going?
I mean, do you want to see me with my tinfoil hat on?
Bring it.
I mean,
I
think that Donald Trump is a person who makes money disappear by trade. Money go in, where money go.
Where money go out.
Yeah, something come out not worth money that went in. What happened to money? Like, it's very – it's like the July 4th, America 250. Like, it all looks kind of like a grift, right? And I feel like the military budget is clearly a way for money to go in, something to come out, but, like, what comes out doesn't match the money that went in.
Yeah.
Like, why are we – and even if it does, like, why are we misappropriating it so dramatically so that the Defense Department under Pete Hegseth was scrambling to spend money in September of 2025 so that they wouldn't threaten their continued huge budget. So they were eating lobster all the time and, like, fancy meals.
And they bought a bunch of pianos.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, that was the most obscene.
They didn't put any pianos on this ship either. Like,
I
if
know.
They had pianos, they could at
no,
least –
No, they bought a grand piano, a baby grand or a grand piano for – like the admiral of the blah, 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 you know what I mean? As if that person needed it because they were just trying to spend money. Like you said, if people don't understand, you try to spend money because if you don't spend your whole budget from the year before, they might not give it to you the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just like, you know, making it rain.
Mm-hmm. They should have just gone to Costco.
They could
and like just completely like loaded those ships up
with fruit by the foot that makes you sick with some sort of botulism that we've given
them
now.
Pallets of spam. Pallets of spam. They could have had all interesting, like, I saw, like, a birria bomb, which is, like, for a slow cooker. They could have gotten so many gadgets and gizmos.
It would have been good. I mean, look, this is what happens when you hire people for loyalty and looks and not skill and experience,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the whole plan was to bomb Iran and then figure out the rest later. They thought it would be easy peasy, like Venezuela,
yeah.
And it really was not. There's no funding plan, no exit strategy, no logistics. It's just all bravado. It's like a guy who's drunk at a bar and he gets into a fight with someone and the person's like, I'm a black belt. And he's like, I can take you. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I feel like our military is doing. But it's made us so weak and vulnerable. Like,
yeah.
We should be really upset at how vulnerable we are. We're now like sitting ducks with a $1 trillion budget.
Cool. Nobody would want to take anything from us. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more news. Hysteria is brought to you by OneSkin. A lot of skincare makes big promises but can't deliver. OneSkin's different, and that's why I've been loving their products. They never set out to become a skincare company. Founded by 4 PhD longevity scientists, they focused on one thing, skin aging. Quick fixes or marketing trends were never the point. They tested the best-selling anti-aging products on the market and found the same hard truth over and over. None of them were working on the actual cause of aging. They were just working on the surface signs of aging, and turns out some didn't work at all. After years of research and testing over 900 novel peptides, they developed OS1, their proprietary peptide proven to address a leading driver of visible skin aging. It's the foundation of every product they make. So over time, you'll see smoother skin, more even tone and radiance, and visibly fewer fine lines. Skin that both looks and acts younger. I've been using OneSkin. I absolutely love it. I love how easy it is to use. I love how light it feels on my skin. I have sensitive skin, and this is a product that does not irritate my skin. I know that sounds like a low bar, but a lot of face products make my skin mad, and one skin makes my skin happy. Last night before I went to bed, I put on the OS One eye cream, and I love it. And this isn't just my experience. OneSkin's results are backed by four peer-reviewed clinical studies with over 10,000 five-star reviews, and they've been recognized by Bloomberg and Fast Company as a leader in skin longevity. Born from over 10 years of longevity research, OneSkin is helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code Hysteria at oneskin.co/hysteria. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. There's been a groundbreaking discovery to help us all age healthier, and it's thanks to helping dolphins. I'm excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first emerging essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It's an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness, and you guessed it, healthy aging. Fatty 15 co-founder Dr. Stephanie Van Watson discovered the benefits of C15 while working with the U.S. Navy to continually improve the health and welfare of older dolphins. Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a foundational healthy aging nutrient, which helps to slow aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they can become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. To help support and optimize healthy aging, a team of doctors funded by the U.S. Navy spent over a decade to develop the pure science-backed and bioavailable C15 zero ingredient in Fatty 15. This functionality leads to, we're all aging, which means that healthy aging starts from birth. Studies have shown that C15 is a foundational nutrient that supports healthy growth and development in children and supports our long-term health as adults. Fatty 15 has three times more cellular benefits than EPA and omega-3. By replenishing our cells with the crucial C15 nutrient, Fatty 15 effectively repairs cells, reverses age-related damage at the cellular level, and restores our long-term health and wellness. In my view, it's always easier to maintain than it is to regain, and so Fatty 15 is a great option for me as I get a little older. I like to take it to make sure that as I age, I'm as healthy and active as I can be. Fatty 15 was developed to support healthy aging for all, from kids to parents to grandparents. That's why award-winning Fatty 15 is now available as pure capsules, delicious apple mint gummies for teens and adults, and yummy berry blast gummies for kids. Fatty 15 is on a mission to support healthy aging for all, including all ages and stages of life. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code Hysteria at checkout. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that appreciates the sentiment behind but cringes at the execution of the Jason Kelce AI data center pee beer commercial. Lee, what did you make of that ad spot that where Jason Kelce, for some reason, is encouraging people to mail their pee to data centers for cooling?
Yeah, look, and Jason Kelce, along with like an energy drink and, you know, liquid death water, there's part of it that I'm like, okay, this is funny. Like, I get it, what they're doing. But it's, I don't know. I just feel like the data center thing, like, the whole thing is so broken that we now have pee commercials being sent. And first of all, pee's warm. It's not cold. Well, it's not going to cool down those things. And, like, I just think the whole thing is so depressing that this is where we are. You know what I mean? And I can't say I'm, like, 100% on board with this commercial. I get where they're coming from. Uh-huh. But hard pass for me. Yeah. It doesn't really make me want to buy either of those products. So
I do love Liquid Death, though.
And so there's my son.
They're not a sponsor, but I just gotta say, we have Liquid Death, the cherry obituary drink, is perfect. It is perfect. It is so
a perfect
good.
Beverage.
It is a perfect beverage. An ice cold cherry obituary drink after like a long day. Sometimes I'll mix in a little something else into it, but it is perfect. Okay. I could go on about cherry obituary.
I could wax poetical about this tall can of waterish stuff.
It's like water with like a hint of cherry. It's so good. It's
yeah,
so good.
What Crystal Light was in my childhood.
All right, Lee. What else are we getting into today?
I think we should talk about the fact that exactly what you were talking about. Money in, no idea where money go out. And I think the biggest problem is that like we should be super concerned that this person that we're talking about that seems to have a very good idea of how to take money and make it disappear is going to maybe get a bank of his own. He's going to have a bank, right? So World Liberty Financial, which is Trump's Trump's cryptocurrency, has now been conditionally approved by a federal financial regulator appointed by Trump himself to become a bank. And I don't know if anyone remembers that scene from Hamilton when they were singing about how concerned they were that Alexander Hamilton wanted to start a like national bank because, you know, the government officials would have too much power over our money. Now we're talking about giving one government official, the same government official, by the way, that the Supreme Court, the IRS, the now new AG has made above the law, his own bank, right? So, like, what are we even doing here? If this goes through, honestly, if this goes through, World Liberty Financial would be able to issue stablecoins, which would then be backed by safe reserve assets like the U.S. Treasury, making Tripp's cryptocurrency the one that's owned by himself and his sons and the Saudis and the Qataris, right? Like the 9/11 crew, convertible one-to-one to U.S. dollars, right? So, this is a way that they could take untraceable crypto, launder it through a U.S. government-sanctioned bank, and then convert it into cash. So we are giving the guy who had 300 bank accounts closed by Capital One for potential money laundering a laundromat, right? I just don't know what we're doing
That's here. Really – you know, I keep thinking about like – I know my brain is like trying to kind of crystallize this into something that's like less overwhelmingly corrupt. But like I would never play Monopoly with Donald Trump, where somebody that cheats at golf, you know what I mean? I don't think that they should have a bank. I don't think that someone who cheats at golf should be in charge of a bank. I mean, because like I was thinking, you know, do I think – what about other leaders of banks? Do I think they cheat at golf? I don't think Jamie Dimon cheats at golf. Well, I think Dick Fuld probably cheated at golf.
I will tell you, the Prime Minister of Canada, he ran two banks, right? He ran the Bank of England and he ran Bank in Canada. And he helped both financial crises that we went through. Like, I might give him a bank, but I do not think that.
Oh, Lee's Canadian, by the way, guys.
I am Canadian, but he's doing a great job. But here's the thing. Like, Senator Elizabeth Warren, I think, said it the best. She said, if this isn't stopped, which it should be, like the Congress should be absolutely outraged that we're even suggesting this. But she said, if this isn't stopped, President Trump would be able to approve, operate, and supervise his own bank, which is clearly absolutely ludicrous. And this is the same company, World Liberty Financial, that Trump reported making $800 million in income from last year. Mm-hmm. And now he's here being like, actually, you know what? I think I should probably own the bank at the same time. And I think genuinely the American people have to be flipping out about this, and they really need to be talking to their Congress members about killing this in its infancy, because – this is like this would make Putin blush. This level of corruption is like
it's very smash and grab. Yeah. Russia after the fall of the wall, everybody just kind of taking whatever they can. The thing that really strikes me about his overtures to getting a full on bank is the adage that Donald Trump confesses by accusing, I think, really applies here, because he and people who say whatever he wants them to say have been concerned about fraud all of a sudden. Fraud. Oh, what's going on with the fraud? Like, I think that we should have taken that as an indicator that Donald Trump was about to start his own giant fraud machine.
Yeah.
And it's very concerning. This is a way for people who – and I think that a thing that people should realize is that this bank is not just going to be a free-for-all. Like, I can't just be like, you know what? Cool. I'm going to do some crime now. I'm going to launder some money through Donald Trump's bank, because I'm not friends with Donald Trump. If you are friends with Donald Trump and he owes you – you can – if you have – he owes you favors, you can use this bank in order to launder money. He's still going to go after enemies of himself for doing the same thing, but not his friends. So this is like another example of – a bank that will only really be available to people who do what Donald Trump wants them to do.
Yeah, well, this is the law that only applies to people who are not friends with Donald Trump now. It's that old adage that's, you know, for my friends, everything, for my enemies, the law. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of how we're functioning at this point. And I just want to be so clear that, like, we went into Venezuela and took a bunch of money. It's missing. Mm-hmm. We took a trillion, billion dollars, whatever it was, to go into the Board of Peace. It's missing, right? Like, there's already money that's being laundered. Donald Trump had all those accounts closed because of money laundering. He sold, you know, a place near Mar-a-Lago that he bought a mansion, you know, for $45 million and then sold it 2 years later for $90 million and had done nothing to it. So, the money laundering is all over the place. And then you give the guy the money laundering. And I think we should also be clear that this is J.D. Vance just did a speech in a Q&A where he said he thinks that we should end the U.S. dollar's position as the global reserve currency.
That terrified me.
Because we are giving a guy with a cryptocurrency his own bank. And then you've got the vice president being like, you know what, like maybe we shouldn't have the U.S. as, you know, having the dollar. So he's like, we consume too much and Americans buy too much. And I was like, well, tell that to Americans who are drowning in debt right now.
Yeah.
But this idea.
Didn't J.D. Vance just do like a round of podcast appearances where he was like, he was basically like a Hype Williams video from the late 90s. Like, I fly around on a helicopter. I'm so like, I have such a fabulous life. Like
Aaron, he took his child to their like golf or riding lesson, like something very posh in a helicopter because they might be late. Like they took the vice president's helicopter to get his son
to golf.
Yes.
Okay.
He's a man of the people, this one.
Yeah. Total regular guy.
He's like, I love it. This has been great. I don't go to the grocery store. I don't cook a meal. Like, I love this job.
Well, you're literally from Hillbilly Elegy to Beverly Hillbillies. Like, it is real. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's like, come on, man. This is like so nouveau riche that I'm a little bit embarrassed.
What do you think the odds are that Congress stands up to this bank?
I think if public outcry gets big enough, the odds are higher. I think if the polling going into the election this cycle looks more and more dangerous to people that thought they were safe, they might stand up and do something. This might be an easy win for them, for Republicans, because it's so ridiculous. It is so ridiculous on its face. We can't give this to him. But more people should know about it. More people should be yelling at the representatives about it. And more people should be yelling about data centers as well.
Oh, my God.
We've got a data center.
Data centers, the worst. Okay, listen, like in March, Gallup poll showed that 71% of Americans oppose the construction of AI data centers in their neighborhood. And yet we are putting these things up like just one on every corner, right? And at the end of 2025, the United States had 5,427 data centers. How is it that these things are going up so fast? It takes 6 months of city and neighborhood approvals to even build like an ADU over your own garage.
Oh, yeah.
And that is with everyone else's buy-in. You have to get approval from this person, approval from that person. These data center monstrosities are going up completely against the wishes and the expressed desires, by the way, of the communities themselves. But I feel like this was kind of always the plan. This is why they got rid of the EPA. This is what Elon was really doing with DOGE, right? First, it was, you know, get rid of all the people that are investigating me and like close all the organizations that are investigating my private companies. But then in kind of a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours tit for tat situation, he was also paving the way for what the bigger plan was with these data surveillance centers. And I think these data centers, they just need so much energy that some of these companies are building gas turbines on site to fuel them. They're essentially jet engines running 24 hours a day to power these. In fact, journalists and scientists started using thermal imaging to show how much heat these places were pulling off. And the visuals are staggering. I'm not sure if you've seen those videos with like how much heat and pollution is coming off. You can't see it when you really look at them. Mm-hmm. But when you put thermal imaging on it, you can really see it.
Oh my
and
gosh.
It's no wonder they're poisoning the air and like heating up the surrounding area up to 12 degrees, by the way, for 100 miles, saying nothing about the water they're using. I saw the people in Coachella Valley being like, if they heat up 100 miles, 12 degrees, like we're already in the desert. Like we won't be able to live here. No one will be able to function. So I have to question why we're even allowing this to happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very puzzling for me as well, because it to me feels like we are on a fast track to a complete surveillance state. This isn't really about getting people their own personal assistants or like streamlining workflow or
they're
whatever.
Not helping us.
It's trying to make us completely surveillable, completely controllable. And I sound tinfoil hatty, but there's no other direction this is going. Like it's always – technology always goes to appeasing horniness or causing war. Everything is like horny war. Eventually it leads there or it came from there.
Yeah.
And this is clearly leading to some kind of AI-driven surveillance state, AI-driven war machine. And I can't believe that people are not realizing that all of these sales pitches that we're getting from technology companies that are, by the way, being rightfully called out as bullshit by people, they all are just such I feel like we're being gaslit by them.
Of course, we're being gaslit.
It's like we're developing a weapon. That's what's happening. But there's a bunch of steps that need to happen before we're at weapon. And one of those steps is we need to have all of these data centers up. We need to have all of this data. We need to be collecting data perpetually on people so that we can hone these weapons. Yeah.
No, I mean, listen, you're talking about like this tech comes down to basically porn or war, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing is, if you think about the people that control these companies, for them, they know that if they keep doing this stuff that takes our water and takes our land and heats up our thing and we can't cook, you know, we can't grow our food and our animals die on our farms and because of the what's coming off these things, that there will be a war. And so what they're trying to do is set up a situation where even if we fight back, we can't because they've completely surveilled us. They know what we're doing. I think about like old Eastern Bloc countries and how people would meet, you know, in like private little places to have discussions about how to be in a, you know, how to fight back. Mm-hmm. They're trying to eliminate that possibility of us being able to do anything without them watching us. And I don't know anyone that is a regular American who isn't, you know, Sam Altman or whoever, who aren't even sure if they want the human race to survive. By the way, these tech guys like Thiel and stuff, and you know, they're asked, mm-hmm. "Will you want the human race to survive?" Right, and they're like, "What?" Well, you know, and so it's problematic. And right. These are the guys building this. And I think we need to be really serious that they're hoping that they can get it done fast enough mm-hmm. that we don't fight back properly. I mean, I heard recently that Halloween is supposed to be a flock out night because everyone's already on the streets in costumes and masks. And there's a whole group of people that are like, those flock cameras have got to go.
Not that we're saying that you should.
We are not saying that. I'm saying I heard this rumor.
Other people are saying
that. Yeah.
No, we're not. We would never encourage anybody.
I would never.
Anybody.
I can't even breathe in a mask.
Anything. No. I would never encourage anybody to do anything.
Never.
To a flock camera.
Never.
Never, never, never. Not like what they did in Minnesota where they cut down all the flock cameras.
No.
I saw a video of a police officer in Wisconsin having a conniption about the fact that people didn't like the flock cameras, and he basically threw a fit. I will have to send it to you after.
Please do.
But it's funny because he does it with this really real Wisconsin accent, and he's so aggrieved, and he's like, you know, you guys can't even and it's like, it's very silly. He basically threatens to run background checks on people who are protesting the flock cameras.
Because we live in the land of the free and now we're the land of the surveilled. Like, people should be outraged. They should be absolutely outraged. I feel this all the time. I want to remind people, like, hey, man, everything that you're upset about, the ICE raids, the detention centers, the pardons Trump's giving to his friends and family or people that pay him, the government contracts that he's giving to insiders, the, like, extraordinary price of groceries and homes, every vanity project that you're like, how do we have money to gild these horses? Mm-hmm. Everything you're upset about, like even if it's Trump's big boy day out parties, like the UFC thing on the White House lawn mm-hmm. that he's now saying, you know, it was people have sabotaged the grass. I'm like, bro, you put a ring on top of the grass. So everyone knows that.
And it's a ring-shaped brown area.
He's saying these people came in and destroyed my grass. But like everything that you're upset about, it could all be over if Congress just did their job. Mm-hmm. If Congress, Republican Congress members who have control of both houses of Congress just stood up and said no to this man, it could stop everything from the, you know, unnecessary war to, you know, the UFC fights. Everything could be stopped, but they refuse to tell this man no. So,
I mean, it's literally like, remember that show, My Super Sweet 16?
Yes.
It is Donald Trump's Super Sweet 16.
Like, every day.
Every single day. It is unending.
Yeah.
They were rolling out a Lamborghini cake. We are putting on a UFC fight, and it just doesn't
We're having
end.
An indie race now where it could destroy, like, things in the Smithsonian's and, like, wreck the roads where people in D.C. already are like, we already have the worst traffic in the world. It is dangerous what we're doing just to placate this one giant 10-year-old boy mm-hmm. who's on a shopping spree with our money.
It just is – this is a really good – I guess maybe one good takeaway of the Trump era is that it's a perfect illustration of why men should not be in charge. We should – this is what happens when we let men run everything. Like you –
Well, see, that part's right, when we let men run everything. Because I'm telling you, like, what I saw John Ossoff do this week, I'm like, that man can be in charge. Mm-hmm. Because he's out there saying, like, we need to bring our soldiers home. We need to treat our soldiers like the heroes that they are. And then the Republicans and the entire right wing lose their mind because he looks handsome saying Republican style things.
Yeah.
And they lose it over Natalie. And now every single one of them has the same talking point from a, you know.
Magically.
Like, they know. There are men out there that can do great jobs. I'm a huge believer in the matriarchy. I think we should be a matriarchy through and through.
Top to bottom.
But I keep reminding people that a matriarchy isn't just a flip side of the patriarchy.
No.
It's not women on the top of the pyramid.
That's a gynocracy.
Thank you.
Yes.
Look at you with your big words.
Thank you.
I like it. No, it's a circle. Right? It's like who we center in the middle. We're all in the circle and we center people who are weakest, which is mostly children and the sick and the elderly. And it's like making sure those people are okay, then all the rest of us will be okay. Do the kids have good education? Do the kids have good drinking water? Do the kids have safe places to live? Do the kids not get shot in their schools? Then we're all going to be doing better, right? That's a matriarchy. And there can be great male leaders in a matriarchy. But not these broification dudes that are like the alpha bros who are the least alpha I've ever met. You know, they are the wussiest men I've ever seen. They build makeup stations, you know, first. That is the primary concern. Change the letterhead. You know, these horses need to be shinier.
Add serifs to things. We got to add serifs to the fonts.
So these are the men that cannot be in charge. And these are the men that, you know, any sort of version of the toxic patriarchy has told us are the alphas. And these are the wrong men to put in charge.
Absolutely. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk family estrangement. Hysteria is brought to you by Helix. The summer heat has hit LA in a serious way this week, and I have never been so grateful for my Helix mattress. Its cooling technology prevents sweaty nights and helps me get some actual quality sleep. I have the Midnight Luxe mattress with the Glaciotex cooling cover and cool forest layer because I don't play about being cold at night. I like to feel like I'm in a refrigerator, and LA makes it tough. But Helix makes it easy. Helix has over 20 mattress models, so you can find the perfect model for you. I've had my Helix for years now. It's durable, it's high quality, still feels new. It's genuinely one of the best upgrades I've ever made because a good night's sleep sets you up for success every single day. Whenever I sleep at a hotel, I dread sleeping without my Helix. Helix makes it so easy. They deliver your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. They have a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. Rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. The Happy with Helix guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress. Helix is the most awarded mattress brand, and if my opinion isn't enough, it's also tested and reviewed by experts like Forbes and Wired. Go to helixsleep.com/hysteria for 27% off site-wide, exclusive for listeners of Hysteria. That's helixsleep.com/hysteria for 27% off site-wide, exclusive for listeners of Hysteria. helixsleep.com/hysteria. This episode of Hysteria is brought to you by Alloy Health. Here's something nobody tells you. Skin changes that start in your 40s aren't just aging, they're hormonal, specifically estrogen loss. Estrogen naturally helps maintain collagen, support elasticity, and keep skin hydrated. As estrogen declines, skin gets thinner, drier, and more crepey. That's why your expensive cleanser, retinol, moisturizer, none of them were designed to solve a hormonal problem. Okay, I just started using this a few weeks ago. I was curious. I would say curious. It has been really noteworthy. I have the face cream and the body cream. I put the face cream on my face at night. I put the body cream right here. It has made a visible difference. My skin feels plumper. Its redness has gotten better. It has been less dry. It's felt less dull. Nobody told us our routines need to change and the solutions didn't really exist, but now they do. That answer is M4 Skincare from Alloy, the first head-to-toe line of estriol-powered skincare. Estriol is a safe, gentle, and bioidentical form of estrogen, clinically proven to rebuild collagen, restore elasticity, and visibly reduce wrinkles. M4 face cream, 88% of users saw improved elasticity. M4 body treatment, 95% felt smoother skin. You can use it on your elbows, you can use it on your knees, neck, whatever, wherever you want to feel smoother. The full line targets face, eyes, body, estrogen-powered skincare everywhere you notice changes. It's prescription strength without the appointments, pharmacy trips, or insurance hassle, HSA and FSA eligible, delivered free to your door. Here's how it works. Complete your intake. M4 is available by prescription, so you'll start with a quick online form. Then you'll be matched with a menopause specialized physician who reviews your intake and prescribes what's right for your skin. Plus, you get $0 unlimited messaging with your doctor. M4 is delivered to your door. Once approved, your prescription ships straight to you. No pharmacy, no hassle. Try M4 Skincare from Alloy and see results in as little as 8 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code Hysteria to get $20 off your first order. Your menopause specialized doctor will tailor your skincare to your needs. Plus, you get $0 unlimited messaging with your doctor. Head to myalloy.com and use code Hysteria to get $20 off your first order. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that is celebrating a return of honesty to politics. Why don't we play a clip of a moment of honesty in politics?
Are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? And if so, why or how?
I'm just going to be honest here. I'm not on national security. I'm not that informed on national security. So, but I do support the military. My brother was in the Air Force for 33 years. So I will do everything I can to support the military. My dad was in the Army. I'm not a polished politician up here. National security is not my thing, not my area of expertise, but I do support the military.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, that was U.S. Senator Darlene Graham.
Acting U.S. Senator right now.
She is currently
we are in a war, and that woman is a senator right now.
Yeah, yeah. She's going to be honest. She's going to help the troops. She doesn't know how. She doesn't know what they need. She's going to help them. She's for the troops.
What are we doing? Like, come on.
Can you imagine if a surgeon came into you're about to go under. You're in the OR. And you hear the surgeon say, well, I don't know very much about the human body, but I'm in favor of getting well. You're cutting
Count
me open.
Count back from 10.
You're about to cut me open, you maniac. You have to know how these things work.
Yeah.
You have to know. And she's running for re-election.
She is.
She's running against a great candidate, though. The Democratic nominee, Annie Andrews.
She's the best. I've been working with Annie Andrews, seriously, since she ran her first campaign against Nancy Mace. And I love her because she is the first person. She came out. First of all, we need way more STEM people in government.
Mm-hmm.
There's too many science and technology things that we don't understand. It's how we end up with people like HHS Secretary RFK Jr., who don't know anything about what they're doing and make us all sick.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a pediatrician. She's a working pediatrician. And she's like, listen, I love my job. I chose to do this because I want to make kids healthy. And unfortunately, our government is making sure kids are not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to do another job and stay away from be away from my own family because I will help more children. And she is the most amazing person.
Mm-hmm.
She is legitimately in it for the people. And then she's potentially running against this woman whose entire claim to fame is being Lindsey Graham, who was a giant war hawk's.
Mm-hmm.
Sister.
Who doesn't know anything.
But she doesn't know anything about – you think her brother would have talked about, it at a family dinner maybe?
Yeah.
That's all he talked about was war. He was giddy when we went to war with Iran.
Maybe she just – her eyes glazed over and she's like,
she's like, oh, here goes Lindsay.
Yeah. Here he goes again. Speaking of –
Who makes their sister a senator when you die? Like, that is so bananas. Like you said, your surgeon came in. It was like, I won't be doing this. My sister's going to do it.
Yeah, my sister's going to do it. And the sister is like, I don't know very much about bones, but – But yeah, I'm rooting for you. All right. Let's talk about families. In the past couple of years, there have been a lot of stories of high-profile family estrangement that have suddenly become part of the cultural conversation. Harry and Meghan splitting from the royal family. Brooklyn Beckham splitting from his royal family, a different kind of royal family. There's not much data on there about family estrangement, but the data we do have indicates that family estrangement is on the rise. The first large-scale national survey on family estrangement in 2019, so this would have been like 7 years ago, which is crazy, it found that 27% of American adults had cut off contact with a family member. And a YouGov poll from 2025 found 38% of American adults say that they are currently estranged from a family member. Now, that same poll found more specifically that 16% of American adults say they're currently estranged from a parent. And the behaviors cited for the estrangement are that parents engaged in manipulative behavior, physical, emotional or sexual abuse, lies and betrayal. So good reasons to cut somebody off, right? Nevertheless, over the last month, I've just happened to notice some stuff. I've noticed what I would characterize as a smattering of articles bemoaning family estrangement as something that is the children are, in fact, wrong. not family estrangement is something that is happening. It's happening in increasing numbers. And so it's really on parents to do some self-examination and figure out why their kids don't want to talk to them anymore. No, this new generation of family estrangement think pieces are all like, don't cut off your parents. It's bad. And there cites very little evidence for why it's bad. Usually relies on like one anecdote of a person who cut their parents off and then was like, gee, I shouldn't have done that. Okay, so nobody should do it. I think there's something deeper going on. This feels to me like something coordinated. Lee, what do you think is going on here with all of this family estrangement, pearl clutching, mostly from a sort of right-wing perspective?
Yeah. No, it's definitely a party of family values kind of thing. I mean, look, it's being framed like it's some sudden crisis. That's not actually the case.
Yeah.
I think this generation is just deciding that they don't have to go through their life miserable like generations before them did. In many ways, I think of it like the increase in divorce rates where people were like, oh, people are getting divorced and we're ruining the family. And it's like, no, it's the same issue with the family estrangement and divorce rates. For a long time, women had to be partnered up to exist in society. So they got married and then they stayed married. And then when they didn't have to do that anymore, the divorce rates went up, right? Mm-hmm. Because women were asking more from their partners. And when men couldn't do that, we suddenly have a loneliness epidemic, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the same thing with parents. Like if they're saying to me, like, I gave you a roof over your head and you had food, so like you need to behave how I want you to behave, right? And a lot of children are saying, no, I actually don't. I need you to treat me like an actual person. I need to not feel bad about myself every single time I'm with you or whatever it is. I think it's also that people have way less children these days. Mm-hmm. So they put the loss of one relationship probably has more weight than it would have a couple generations ago. If I had like 9 children and one wasn't talking to me, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be such a big deal. And I think there's also this argument, which I think is very interesting, about smartphones and how smartphones have created the expectation of constant contact and connection mm-hmm. with your family members, which is not always possible or desirable. So maybe you're not so much estranged as you're just not getting everything you want from your child. You're not getting, you know, the constant need for connection that the technology offers you, but it's pushing your child away. Mm-hmm. I just think that the whole thing is pretty fascinating. I mean, you said that the first study was in 2019 and then the next study was in 2025.
Mm-hmm. And we have like scant data on this.
Right. No, absolutely. But I mean, you could say, okay, it's gone up. Family estrangement has gone up more than 10% in less than 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. And that makes sense to me because the last 10 years have been the Trump years, right? And so many people have become estranged because of what we're calling politics, but it's really morality and behavior and what you're willing to tolerate. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are finding themselves estranged from family members because they just can't tolerate where their family member sits on the political spectrum right now.
I've seen ads on Fox News that are about family estrangement.
Right.
And I've never seen an equivalent on MS Now. I've never seen, you know, if I'm reading The Nation, I don't have like a little thing on the side that's like, what if your kids don't talk to you anymore? And it just seems like maybe this is a scenario facing people who are on one side of the political spectrum. And these pieces that we're seeing offer them kind of a balm that's like, it's not your fault, actually. You're not terrible. You're not intolerable. Your kids are the problem. And actually, maybe it's even your kid's therapist. Maybe your kid shouldn't be going to therapy. I had a friend many years ago who had a very dysfunctional relationship with his mother. And I remember witnessing a conversation where he casually mentioned in front of her that he was going to go to therapy. And she was like, oh, you're going to talk bad about me in therapy. And she started crying. And it was just like, yeah, that's why he's going to therapy. Like, that is why. It to me, it just feels like this. It is aimed at people who are on the right to tell them that they're actually not wrong. And I think that, Lee, during our production call, you mentioned something that you thought was maybe a little bit more insidious going on here, that this push, this narrative that it's the children's fault and the children are doing something wrong by cutting their parents off kind of serves a political end. Can you go into that a little bit?
I think generally, I think that the entire MAGA movement was built around it's not your fault. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the job that you want, it's because these immigrants or these women took your job. If you don't have the life that you want, it's because these people stole it from you. It's because of the open borders. It's because of this. It's because of that. It's never self-responsibility. It's never looking inward at yourself and being like, what did I do?
Or the system. Yeah. The system
What did I do? Or what is broken in the system that didn't allow me to get where I need to or want to be? And I think that this is just the next product of that, because if you look at what's going on around the country right now, you can't say, well, I don't have this because of these people, and I don't have that because of these people. So we need a new scapegoat. In this case, it's your own children. If your own children are asking you to like really look at what's going on around the country, and you might take a moment to do that, and that might actually change your political persuasion because you've lost, you know, can't see your grandchild anymore. They've removed themselves from you. That might actually persuade you to open your mind a little, watch a different news channel, you know, read different information. Because the thing is, once the wool comes off people's eyes, it doesn't go back on. Mm-hmm. I know how long we worked on my father-in-law, who was career, like I said, career military, right? They were like, we are Republican. And we kept saying, yes, but this party is not Republican. This is not the Republican Party. The Republican Party is gone. And the more we went through it, once the wool comes off, it's not going back on. In fact, a lot of those people become almost zealots about how much they were lied to by somebody else. And they don't want that from their own children. So they're doing this estrangement thing. Therapy's bad. It's all woke, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing is that, yeah, removing the stigmatism of why people do therapy means more people are in therapy. That's actually what is going on. Mm-hmm. And getting to know yourself and having a better sense of who you are might lead you to spend less time with people who are damaging to you, who are toxic to you. And sometimes those people happen to be your family members. Mm-hmm. When I think about people like Harry and Meghan or, you know, the Beckham family, that's people who got married to someone and their family doesn't like who they married. Like that is pretty typical, and that's been going on for generations. Like I said, this is not some sudden crisis that we're coming on. This is something that's been happening for a really long time, and it's now being capitalized on by one side of the political spectrum to try and hold on to a base that might otherwise drift away from them.
Mm-hmm. I think it also is a testament to the way that people tend to view their children based on their political beliefs.
Correct.
I have found that conservatives seem to think that their children are their property.
Yeah.
And their children are theirs to control. And I mean, it's not totally conservatives. There are some people who are more left-leaning like that. But I think that I see this a lot when I see people talking about like, oh, conservatives are the ones that are having all the babies, so liberals are going to die out. And it's like, that's not – many conservative couples have made plenty of liberal children, right? They've made gay children. They've made trans children. It's like that is not a reliable way. Your children are not yours to control. They're human beings.
Yeah.
They're human beings. Like you keep them safe. You feed them. You teach them how to be decent human beings. You make sure they go to school. You make sure they take baths. You protect them from danger. You keep them – I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. You keep them from hurting themselves constantly. But then like they are their own people and they go out in the world and they make their decisions. And if your worldview depends on them being yours to control, then it is really deeply upsetting when you completely lose control. There are actually no mechanisms to make your kids continue to talk to you.
No.
There are actually – and something that I think we haven't touched on yet is that a lot of people that go no contact because they are LGBTQ and their parents are huge fucking assholes about that.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something so gross about these articles telling people that are LGBTQ who have parents who are terrible that they need to spend time with their terrible parents and let their parents both have their terrible beliefs, have their dehumanizing beliefs, and then also maintain a relationship with a person that they don't see as fully human according to their beliefs. Like that is – those are two things that should not be they should not go together. That is not something that you get to have. You can't have your cake. It's literally having your cake and eating it too.
Yeah, and that's why they hate therapists, because a therapist will tell the kid that. The therapist will say, you don't need to actually tolerate that. You don't need to go to Thanksgiving if you don't want to go. If you feel bad about yourself all the time, it's okay if you go with friends and you choose, you know, a family that you build for yourself. That is all right. I think you're right about the conservative side of the spectrum and the conservative media in general pushing patriarchal dominance, pushing that way more than the left, you know, I'm the father and I tell you what to do, that kind of behavior that often happens in families. The left is more about living your truth, and it's definitely more pro-therapy, and it's definitely more pro-LGBTQ. So, but aside from parent to child, like you said, you have a 2- and a 4-year-old. Your job is to make sure that they get the things that they need to keep them safe, to keep them fed, to keep them clean. But other than from parent to child, no one owes you a relationship. Mm-hmm. No one owes you that. You earn a relationship, right? And once children are grown, I have an 18-year-old, so I'm in a totally different position. I took care of him his whole life, and now he's going off to college. And I have to get to know him again as an individual, as a person, not just as my child, mm-hmm. as the person that he is. And that's a tough transition, but it's one you have to do. And mm-hmm. if you end up saying, well, I still say everything and you don't get to do this and I expect you here for the – you have to be like, nope, this is his life now. And I want to be a good enough person that he still wants to hang out with me, not because I'm his mother, but because I'm interesting or because I'm good company or because he knows that I will respect him and love him always, because that is the relationship that comes first. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't owe me that. It's something I have to earn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we're probably going to see more family estrangement pieces, think pieces, Fox News pearl clutching, all that between now and the election, because heaven forbid MAGA people engage in any self-reflection or parents whose kids won't talk to them engage in any self-reflection at all. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Remy. When I am stressed out, I really clench up. And one of the places I clench up the most is my jaw. And one of those times that I clench my jaw is when I sleep. Well, you know what? That's not good for your teeth. That's why I trust Remy to protect my teeth using their custom night guard, along with over 350,000 Americans. Remy night guards are the only FDA-cleared and clinically tested at-home impression kit night guards on the market. Not only do they help prevent teeth damage from grinding, they also help reduce jaw tension and facial muscle strain and improve your sleep quality. You'll get the same professional quality and comfort as a night guard from the dentist for 80% less of the cost by taking your own impression from the convenience of your home. Remy saves your impression so you can enjoy the convenience and savings of Remy Club, where they'll ship a new top and bottom night guard to you every 6 months. Here's how it works. After purchase, your impression kit comes straight to your door. Box is really cute. Not that that's the most important thing, but I thought it was like comes in a really cute package. Then you follow Remy's step-by-step instructions to get your perfect impression. Remy crafts and ships your custom fit night guard. Get your night guard back and start protecting your teeth. It's that easy. Protect your teeth with Remy by using code Hysteria to get 55% off your new night guard from now until the end of August with Remy Club Subscribe and Save. That's 55% off at shopremi.com/hysteria with code Hysteria. Thank you, Remy, for sponsoring this episode.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series from Left, Right, and Crooked Media called Long Play.
For both major parties, the path to winning America runs through the South. But to win it, you have to understand it.
And that's where Long Play comes in. Across six Southern states, Long Play examines the issues driving voters and the assumptions that no longer hold in a region that could shape the future of our politics and our country.
You can binge the whole series right now by subscribing to Long Play Series on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Hysteria, the podcast that is the opposite of shock that Trump himself said that he wouldn't save a drowning child.
He's a real hero. You know, when you see that, I don't know if I'd do it. I wouldn't probably. You're lucky I wasn't on the service that day. I don't know. But no, he's a real hero.
Oh, God, I feel so bad for that poor teenage hero lifeguard.
Oh, my God, I feel bad for everyone in this country. This is ridiculous. Like, what are we doing? Like, you're lucky I wasn't there, kid. You'd be freaking dead. I wouldn't do it. No, you're a hero, but like, I'm probably also a hero. I'm probably the best hero that there ever was. I mean, I wouldn't jump in the water, but like, who is this man truly?
I'm just imagining Donald Trump being swept away by a rip current and like with his arms waving like a beetle that's been turned on its back.
He wouldn't get in the water.
He wouldn't
Come
get in the
on.
Water. No. He wears a suit because it's the only thing that looks halfway decent on him.
He wouldn't even go in the rain.
He wouldn't go in the rain. No, he hates everything. He hates everything natural. Yeah. He is anti-nature.
Anti-nature. That's why we're knocking it all down, America.
That's why Mar-a-Lago face is a thing. That's why he loves golf courses. He loves things that are just completely unnatural.
Can I just say, as a side note, Mar-a-Lago face is the most bananas thing because it reminds me of when I used to, you know, when I was younger and I used to read old National Geographics, and you would see like people in a certain culture who had the big discs in their ears or the big disc in their
mouth.
They did the, you know, all the gold rings, and you got a new one every year. So your neck was really, really long. And it was part of what the culture was. And I remember thinking like, wow, you know, the people all around the world are doing this sort of bodied thing to themselves that must hurt, that must be a problem, that must, you know, be troublesome, but it makes them part of their society. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Mar-a-Lago face is that, mm-hmm. to be part of a society, mm-hmm. that you're saying outwardly, like, look, I'm one of you, even if you end up looking like...
Terrifying. Oh, my kids have gotten scared at people with Mar-a-Lago face before. I was watching that show, that really bad reality show that was about the Mar-a-Lago real... It was like the Netflix version of The Real Housewives of Mar-a-Lago or whatever.
Missed that one.
Yeah, it was like West Palm Beach, and it was just very... everyone was just like... monstrous, but they use it as like a cultural signifier of being of following the rules.
It's also really interesting how often they say that liberals are ugly and liberal women are ugly and like conservative women are the hot ones. I find that really interesting because I'm like, really?
Yeah. Oh, members only. Caroline just texted me. It's members only Palm Beach. It was called. I
missed that one.
My kids were like afraid of the ladies. They were like, mommy, what did she do? And I'm like, she's kind of like a monster. And they were like.
Well, here's the thing. Like, look, I'm someone who has a very aggressively moving face, right? My face does a lot of things. You can tell what my personality is right away. You know, mm-hmm. what I'm thinking of.
Scott Jennings knows
right away. There's a meme of me just doing a face. Like, it's what it's always been. When I was younger, my husband would be like, baby, you got to watch your face. Like, everyone knows what's happening. And the thing is that there are little kids who are afraid of me because I'm like, hey, you know, like big face.
Yeah.
But if my face always stayed like that, that is what would be terrifying. And I think that I have a resting face that is not aggressive. And Mar-a-Lago face is – there is no resting face.
Yeah.
I think about what Kimberly Guilfoyle looked like.
She was pretty.
I mean, absolutely gorgeous.
She was
pretty. It's a shame. It's a shame. And I don't like to diss other people's looks, but they're choosing
these
looks.
No, that's a choice.
I think that's the difference.
Yeah, no. I actually think that it's sexist to not criticize the choices of women because they're women.
Yeah.
I think there's context. I think it's sexist to ignore the context. But, like, they're women making choices, and those choices are dumb. And women are human beings that deserve to have their choices critiqued as well.
Because women making choices, and those choices are dumb.
Yeah, those choices are really dumb, and they look terrible. And in 5 to 10 years, when that shit is completely out of fashion, they're going to be like, yeah. They're going to be like people that got face tattoos because of Post Malone. It's like, uh-oh. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? There was a New York Times Styles article about it, and you got a face tattoo, but now we're not doing that anymore. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get to Sandy Petty, some announcements for the class. We don't need to tell you how important these upcoming midterms are or what's at stake. You already know, which is why you also know we'll need everyone to pitch in and organize in their communities over the coming months. Check out our new collection of Vote Save State tees featuring 9 of the most crucial battleground states on the 2026 map. Get yours and rep your state today at store.crooked.com. Where's my Wisconsin one?
It's coming.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
The woman is down on merch.
I need merch.
Get her.
All
her,
right.
Her Wisconsin thing.
Now let's get to Sandy. That's the only time I've ever barked at Claire. I'm not a barker.
Claire knows what's up now. She's on her way to get Wisconsin.
I'm getting it, ma'am. I'm getting it. Claire, never call me ma'am. I would cry. All right. Now let's get to Sandy Petty. I'm going to start just as something I'm feeling a little bit petty about. It's whatever. So Donald Trump is suing the BBC. Mm-hmm. That is the broadcaster in the UK. He's suing them over a story about January 6th and because of what he said was deceptive editing of his comments that he made right before the gaggle of insane people made their way to the U.S. Capitol and tried to kill some cops. So he sued them because he said it was edited together in a way that was like deceptive. He sued them for $10 billion, right?
That seems like a reasonable, $10 billion. I mean,
$10 billion. It's a banana, Michael. What's it cost? But now during the course of the lawsuit, the BBC is trying to subpoena his children, is trying to serve his children. And Donald Trump is saying that the BBC is targeting his family. It's like, sir, you sued them. You sued the BBC, and now they're trying to get defense by figuring out like what the kids knew. Here's the thing: they can't serve the kids because the kids have Secret Service protection, and so now the BBC is petitioning a court to be allowed to serve them via email or certified mail instead of in person because the process servers can't get through the Secret Service. This is also like it's also like almost slapstick.
Yeah,
it's like it just doesn't make it's so silly. I'm feeling very petty about this. It's
yeah. Like, well, the man is one perpetual self-own. I mean, as soon as they found out that he was going to get his financial subpoenaed for that BBC lawsuit, he was like, whoa, can we get out of this lawsuit? And he's been trying to get out of it for a while because of the subpoena of the financials. And now they're going after the kids and he's trying to keep the kids out of it. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. He's not protecting his children.
Right.
He's protecting himself.
He's got a tiger by the tail and he's like, whoa.
But nobody, I mean, he did the
same thing.
Nobody
told me the tiger would have teeth. Dude. Nobody would told me, hey, time out, tiger. No biting.
I didn't know. But he did the same thing with the Capital One case. I mean, the one that found out that all of his accounts were closed for money laundering, right? He sued them.
Yeah.
He sued them because he said that his accounts were closed because of January 6th. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, no, dude, we closed your accounts because of money laundering. And we wouldn't have said that out loud if you hadn't sued us. Like, it's so many self-owns. I just wish our media wasn't so owned by one side of this political spectrum that we would hear more about these things.
Yeah. It's hard to keep track of it.
I know that's the goal, right? It's a fire hose. It's what Steve Bannon told us they were going to do. Yeah. It's a fire hose of information. So you just feel like, I don't know what's going on. And actually, it hurts me. And so I'm going to go over here instead. Mm-hmm. And they want us not paying attention. They want us to be completely overwhelmed. And we have to keep going like, let's back it up. The man can't have a bank. Let's back it up. He doesn't want to release his financials. Let's back it up. We still have this Epstein Transparency Act that we need to put out. Like, we have to keep backing it up and reminding people what we have.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Lee, sanity corner, or are you feeling
petty?
Oh, my
God. Sanity. My sanity is so on the brink. So no, there will be no sanity.
Okay.
It is all petty all
the
time.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a nerd, so I'm genuinely concerned about the amount of food we cannot eat in America now, right? Like, it's just a never-ending list. Like, there's people that can't afford food, but if they can't afford food, it might kill you now. You know, we've got E. coli in the frozen berries, and we've got cyclospora in the lettuce, and we've got listeria in the soups and cheeses, and botulism in baby formula, and screwworms in the beef. Like, the whole thing is bananas. And now we've got salmonella in the eggs that won the election because we needed to be able to afford them, that could literally kill you. They're like, this is the worst salmonella that we've actually ever had. And I feel like...
Super salmonella.
And I just feel like, are we out of our minds? Like, my family went to Italy this summer. We had the first holiday we'd had in 2 years, maybe. And it was during the worst part of the cyclospora outbreak. And in many ways, Italy sees, you know, food as like art and as like a historical, you know, inheritance to be passed down from generation to generation. And as we were eating all this food and enjoying all this stuff and not worrying about being like poisoned, our country was literally poisoning its own citizens for profit, right? So it's hard to not consider that we have like ruined one of the most basic enjoyments in life by putting profit first. And that's not even talking about the fact that people will be out late at night, like on the streets, eating with friends, eating with family. And we do most of our eating like standing up at a counter in the car, like, you know, like everything's to go because we don't prioritize food as a basic necessity in life that actually brings us joy. And then on top of that, we've put everything, we put profit first on everything. So now we're allowing the food companies to police themselves. Mm-hmm. And we've gone from policing, you know, like checking for 8 foodborne pathogens to 2. You know, we like cut the FDA by 20%. We cut the actual scientists from 11 to 3. You know, like it's just obscene.
Yeah.
And people are really sick and I enjoy eating. Very much. Mm-hmm. I enjoy eating. And like now I'm like, I don't know what to eat in this
country. Like this food stuff has really ruined the summer. Like what? Salads are fucked?
Yep.
Salads were fucked for most
berries
of the summer.
Berries are fucked.
Berries were fucked.
Burgers are fucked.
Burgers are fucked.
Yep.
Popsicles. There's new
Dog food. Dog food's now fucked.
Oh, well, I'm not going to eat.
It's got salmonella in the dog food.
Salmonella in the
dog
food.
So like we're going to kill your dog as well.
Well, what am I going to eat for lunch today?
What are you going to have?
I'm going to have to eat.
You're going to have some nibblies.
Oh, fuck. I'm going to have to.
But it's ridiculous. Americans are being treated like disposable, worthless interferences in the corporate profit. And like just from what we eat.
Yeah.
That's obscene.
Yeah.
And it should make people angry. And it's why MAHA caught so much movement in the first place. Because people were like, what's in our food? Why is our food poisoned? Like, why do we have feces in our food? And why do we have these red dyes that are nowhere else in the world? I mean, it caught fire because people really do understand what's going on. And now I'm like, why are we so sick? Like, this is so dumb. And then we have no health insurance on top of it. So when we do get explosive diarrhea, we can't afford to go to the hospital. Like,
well, you know what? The bright side of that is, you know, poor man's Ozempic. Look.
It's like, Devil Wears Prada. Like, I'm one stomach flu away from my goal weight.
Seriously.
Thank you. Maybe just wants us all to be hotter. Yeah. Hotter and thinner.
Yeah. Although there is a limit to that. There's definitely a limit. I don't think there's anything
hot. Maybe that's what they're doing to the soldiers, too.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I
just don't eat.
Yeah. Gallows humor. Gallows humor here on Hysteria. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Lee, thank you so much for coming by.
What a pleasure.
This was super fun. And listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Reston, Claire Fogarty, Kendra James, Adrian Hill, and me, Aaron Ryan. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Sheng, Mia Kelman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series from Left, Right, and Crooked Media called Long Play.
For both major parties, the path to winning America runs through the South. But to win it, you have to understand it.
And that's where Long Play comes in. Across six Southern states, Long Play examines the issues driving voters and the assumptions that no longer hold in a region that could shape the future of our politics and our country.
You can binge the whole series right now by subscribing to Long Play Series on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.